Goodness gracious. Jeff Bennett here live for just a couple of minutes on this 15th day of December 2022. Last night, first of all, I've got people in from out of town, and the granddaughters, the eldest granddaughters in with her graduation. We've got my Vietnam brother, Smooth, who's here for a few days, who also happens to be my accountant. Just into massive overload. So last night I decided to air part one of a program that I recorded in January of 2017. Now, the title of the program was Life, Liberty, and Health. And my intent was to run part two next week, but with all the folks still being here, and in some respects, it's Brother Smooth will be leaving tonight. Too much stuff going on, so I made a decision to run part two of the program tonight. We're dealing specifically with cancer, cancer-related issues. It's an area that I have become way too accustomed to sharing over the years. Don't forget, tomorrow night, Maggie Rose will be with you. This is Thursday, isn't it? Is today Thursday? Yeah, if today's Thursday, Maggie will be with you tomorrow night for Friday and back visiting you on Monday. I will be back on the air live next Tuesday, I promise you, even as we near the holy day, my friends. Let's get to chapter two of Life, Liberty, and Health. I'll see you next week. Stay with us, won't you?
Was lacking some important portions of the protocol. The guy who edited the book for Kelly did not understand what he was doing. By the way, he was a cancer patient himself. Cancer victim, excuse me. He eventually succumbed. Why? Because he wasn't that serious about the protocol. He wasn't properly following it. I know that for a fact because I know exactly where he was getting his enzymes. And he was horribly erratic with him. Wouldn't change his diet. Would not make the necessary improvements to make his immune system healthy enough to cure himself. So in 2013, after I had completed the editing and the publication of the self-test for the different metabolic types for the Kelly family and estate, John Kelly asked me if I would take over the overhaul of cancer cure and the incurable. First and foremost, as I mentioned before the break, the Food and Drug Administration had issued us a cease and desist on the use of that title, Cancer Cure and the Incurable. They were messing with a wordsmith, folks. It took me a whopping 7 or 10 seconds to come up with a new title for the book. And that title came from deep within Kelly's own writings, from his previous versions of the book. Victory over cancer without surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. Because that's what we're shooting for, is victory. As I mentioned on the program the other day, just in kind of a passing, in June and July of 2015, I began to let people know by both and on the broadcast that the new book would be forthcoming. I didn't expect it to take until November the 1st of 2015 before we shipped it, but that's what happened. Because I'm a perfectionist, I had to have it right. Are there still some typos? There could be. The page is long and long and long enough, you start to gloss over them. You don't see them. I told the people then I would take advance orders from the book. No PayPal, no credit card. Check only. The promise that the checks would not be cashed until such time that the book actually was delivered to the printer. because once that's done, I've got the books in less than a week. In July of 2015, I received an envelope, and I recognized the name on the return address immediately. And she placed the order, thanked me for it, etc. Her note, which I still have in front of me, I had the privilege of going to Dr. Kelly in 1973 in Grapevine, Texas, for treatment. Here I am in 2015 at the age of 69. He was a wonderful, caring man, and I credit him with the life I've had. I am so blessed to have found him and his wisdom. I will always be grateful. I'm pleased his son John is carrying on his message. Thank you and blessings. Signed, Linda H. She ordered Victory and then contacted me and also ordered the self-test book, which I shipped 2 months before I shipped the other book. Pretty interesting. She's not the only case of that type. Look, curing cancer has little to do with getting rid of a group of detectable cancer cells. Treatments like chemo and radiation are capable of poisoning or burning most cancer cells, but they also destroy healthy cells in the bone marrow, the gastrointestinal tract, the liver, the kidneys, the heart, the lungs, etc., which often leads to permanent irreparable damage of entire organs and systems within your body. A real cure of cancer does not occur at the expense of destroying other vital parts of the body. How many times have we told you? 63% of the doctors interviewed in this country, when asked if they were diagnosed with cancer, chemotherapy, the answer was no way, Jose. That's powerful. That's a huge number. Each year, hundreds of thousands of people who were once successfully treated for cancer die from infections, heart attacks, liver failure, kidney failure, and other illnesses because the cancer treatments generated a massive amount of inflammation and destruction in the organs and the systems of the body. Of course, those causes of death are never being attributed to cancer. The statistical omission makes it appear we are making progress in the war on cancer, but many more people are dying from the treatment of cancer than from the cancer itself. A real cure of cancer is achievable only when the causes of excessive growth of cancer cells have been removed or stopped. Look, the word cancer, it's not just a word. It is a statement that refers to abnormal or unusual behavior of cells in your body. And yet, in quite a different context, cancer is referred to as a star sign. When someone tells us that we are a cancer, are we going to tremble with fear of dying? It's unlikely because our interpretation of being of the cancer sign does not imply that we have cancer, the illness. But if our doctor called us into his office and told us we would most likely feel paralyzed, numb, terrified, hopeless, or any or all of the above. You see, the word cancer has the potential to play a very disturbing and precarious role, one that into itself is capable of delivering a death sentence. Being a cancer victim seems to start with the diagnosis of cancer, although its causes may have been there for many years prior to the feeling ill. But in one brief single moment, the word cancer can turn someone's entire life and world upside down. Who or what in this world has bestowed this simple word or statement with such great power that it can preside over life or death? Or does it really? Could it actually be that our collective social belief that cancer is a killer disease, in addition to the aggressive treatments that follow diagnosis, are they largely responsible for the current dramatic escalation of cancer in the Western Hemisphere? I know you might think it's too far-fetched, but cancer can have no power or control over us unless we unconsciously allow it to grow in response to the beliefs, the perceptions, the attitudes, thoughts, the feelings that we have. and the life choices that we make. Would we be just as afraid of cancer if we knew what caused it, or at least understood what the underlying purpose is? Unlikely so. See, if the truth were told, we would most likely probably do everything to remove the causes and thereby set the preconditions for the body to heal itself. But a little knowledge, that's something we call ignorance, or Kelly called it cancer ignorance, is in fact a dangerous thing. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Almost everyone, at least in this industrialized world, knows that drinking water from a filthy pond or polluted lake causes diarrhea. But still only few realize that holding on to resentment and anger, eating fast foods and chemical additives and artificial sweeteners, it's no less dangerous than drinking polluted water. Might just take a little longer to kill it than a tiny amoeba can. We all know that if the foundation of a house is strong, the house can easily withstand external challenges such as a violent storm. I have to share with you that analogy is interesting to me because I've used a very similar analogy, the whole business about the foundation of a house, etc., in relates to things that take place in our personal economic world. Understand something, my friends. Cancer is merely an indication that there's something missing in our body and in life as a whole. Cancer shows that life as a whole, physical, mental, and spiritual, stands on shaky grounds and is fragile, to say the least. It would be foolish for a gardener to water the withering leaves of a tree when he knows damn well that the real problem is not where it appears to be, namely on the symptomatic level of withered leaves. By watering the roots of the plant, he naturally attends to the causative level, and consequently the plant regenerates itself swiftly and automatically. With the trained eye of a gardener, the symptom of withering leaves, that's not a dreadful disease. He recognizes that the dehydrated state of those leaves is but a direct consequence of withdrawn nourishment that they need in order to sustain themselves and the rest of the plant. Why is our body any different? We've had nourishment withdrawn from our bodies, and we're doing nothing about it. Now, I know that this example I share with you from nature might be an analogy, but it does offer a profound understanding of the very complex disease processes in the human body. It describes one of the most powerful and fundamental principles controlling all life forms on this planet. And no matter how skilled we may have become in manipulating the functions of our body through the tools of allopathic medicine, this basic, highly evolved principle of evolution cannot be suppressed or violated without paying the hefty price of side effect riddled suffering and pain. Once again, physically, emotionally, spiritually. I fervently challenge the statement cancer is a killer disease. Furthermore, we're going to attempt to demonstrate that cancer is not a disease at all. You see, many people who received a terminal cancer sentence actually defied the prognosis and experienced total, complete remission. And I've been privileged over these last nearly 18 years to meet, in some cases in person, in other cases on the phone, many of those who came to be taught and learned from Dr. Kelly. He never considered himself a doctor, a practitioner. He was a teacher. He was an educator. And all the kind of things we're talking about in this program today, he bent over backwards to teach people. Yeah, all the things that we've spoken about here, the physical, the emotional, the spiritual. there is no cancer that has not been survived by someone, regardless of how far advanced it was. If even one person has succeeded in healing his cancer, there must be a mechanism for it, just as there is a mechanism for creating it. Every person on the planet has the capacity for both. If we have been diagnosed, we may not be able to change the diagnosis, but it is certainly in our power to alter the destructive consequences that the diagnosis may have upon us. And the way we see the cancer and the steps we take following the diagnosis are some of the most powerful determinants or determinants of our future wellness, or lack thereof. You see, the indiscriminate reference to cancer as being a killer disease by professionals and lay people alike has turned cancer into a disorder with tragic consequences for the majority of today's cancer patients and their families. Cancer has become synonymous to extraordinary suffering and pain and death. And it's true, despite the fact that 90 to 95% of all cancers appear and disappear out of their own accord. And there's not a day that passes making millions of cancer cells. Some people under severe temporary stress make more cancer cells than usual and form clusters of cancerous cells that disappear again once they feel a bit better. And secretions of the DNA's anti-cancer drug, interleukin 2, drop under physical and mental duress and increase again when relaxed and joyful. And thus most cancers vanish without any form of medical intervention, without causing any real harm. And at this very moment, while we're on the air, reaching out to those of you who will listen, there are millions of people walking around with cancers in their body, don't even have a clue that they've got them. Likewise, there's millions of people who heal their cancers without even knowing it. And overall, there's many more spontaneous remissions of cancer than there are of diagnosed and treated cancers. The truth is, relatively few cancers actually become terminal. And yet, once diagnosed, the vast majority of all cancers are never even given a chance to disappear on their own. They are promptly targeted with deadly weapons of cells, chemotherapy drugs, radiation, surgical knife, cut, paste, burn. The problem with cancer patients is that, terrified by that diagnosis, they submit their bodies to all these cut, burn, poison procedures that more likely than not lead them to the day of final sentencing or reckoning. We have to tell you, with our deepest regret, there's nothing more that can be done to help you. Go home and get your affairs in order. Half a century later, they're still telling people the same exact thing. There's nothing more we can do for you. Go home and get your affairs in order. The most pressing question is not how advanced or dangerous a cancer is, but what we need to do to dying from it. Why do some people go through cancer as if it were the flu? Are they just lucky, or is there a mechanism at work that triggers the healing? In other words, what is that element that prevents the body from healing cancer naturally? Or what is that hidden element that makes cancer so dangerous, if it is dangerous at all? What the heck is that? You keep getting this every once in a while. The answer to all of these queries lie with the response of the person who has the cancer, not with the degree of viciousness or the advanced stage it appears to progress to. Do we believe that cancer is a disease? Most of us are going to answer yes, given the informed opinion that the medical industry and mass media have fed to the masses for many decades. And yet the most pressing yet rarely asked question remains, why do we think cancer is a disease? And of course, the normal answer is, well, because I know cancer kills people every day. I would question further, how do we know that it is the cancer that kills the people? Most would argue that most folks who have cancer die. So obviously it must be the cancer that killed them. Yeah, right. We cured the cancer, but the patient died. Yeah, okay. Besides, all the doctors tell us so. But there's no scientific proof whatsoever that cancer is a disease versus a survival mechanism. Most people insist that it is a disease because this is what they have been told to believe. And yet their belief is only hearsay information based on other people's opinions. And these other people heard it from someone else who heard it from someone else. Blah, 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 blah. And so eventually the truth of cancer being a disease can be traced to some doctor who expressed their subjective feelings or beliefs about what they observed and wrote about in some review articles or medical reports. And of course, other doctors agreed with their opinion. And before long, it became a well-established fact that cancer is a vicious illness that told the people in order to kill them. But little by little, one begins to learn the truth. It's quite different. Simplistic. Cancer cells are not part of a malicious disease process. When cancer cells spread or metastasize throughout the body, it's not their purpose or goal to disrupt the body's vital functions or infect healthy cells or obliterate their host, which is the body. Self-destruction is not the theme of any cell, unless, of course, it is old and worn out and ready to be turned over and replaced. These cancer cells, like all other cells, know that if the body dies, they will die as well. And just because some people assume that cancer cells are there to destroy the body does not mean that cancer cells have such a purpose or ability. The cancerous tumor is neither the cause of progressive destruction, nor does it actually lead to the death of the body. There's nothing in a cancer cell that is even remotely the ability. That has even remotely the ability to kill anything. What eventually leads to the demise of an organ or the entire body is the wasting away of cell tissue resulting from continued deprivation of nutrients and life force. The drastic reduction of the shutdown of vital nutrient supplies to the cells of an organ, that's not primarily a consequence of a cancerous tumor, but actually its biggest cause. You see, by definition, a cancer cell is a normal, healthy cell that has undergone genetic mutation to the point that it can live in an anaerobic surrounding. That's an environment where oxygen is not available. In other words, if we deprive a group of cells of vital oxygen, their primary source of it, some of them will die. But others will manage to alter their genetic software program and mutate in a most ingenious way. The cells will be able to live without oxygen and derive some of their energy needs from such things as cellular metabolic waste products. Now, it might be easier to understand that the cancer cell's phenomenon when comparing it with the behavior of common microorganisms. Bacteria, for example, are divided into two main groups, aerobic and anaerobic, meaning that those that need to use oxygen and those that can live without it, which is important to understand since we have more bacteria in our body than we have cells. Ooh, more bacteria in our body than cells. But there's good bacteria and bad bacteria. Aerobic bacteria thrive in an oxygenated environment. They are responsible for helping us with the digestion of food and the manufacturing of important nutrients such as B vitamins. Aerobic bacteria, on the other hand, can appear and thrive in an environment where oxygen does not reach. They break down waste materials, toxic deposits, and dead, worn-out cells. And the body sees the cancer as being such an important defense mechanism that it even causes the growth of new blood cell vessels to guarantee the much-needed supply of glucose and therefore survival and spreading of the cancer cells. It knows that cancer cells do not cause but prevent death, well, at least for a while. until the wasting away of an organ leads to the demise of the entire organism. If the trigger mechanisms for cancer or causal factors are properly taken care of, such an outcome can be avoided. The fact that our immune system protects us against cancer is only partially true. On the one hand, the immune system readily destroys the millions of cancer cells that a healthy human body produces as part of the daily turnover of 30 billion cells. But on the other hand, the immune system takes no action to eradicate cancer cells that develop buildup of toxins, congestion, and here's the big one, emotional stress. Cancers and all other tissues in the body are larded with cancer-killing white cells like T cells. And in the case of kidney cancer and melanomas, for example, white cells make up 50% of the mass of the cancers. And since the T cells recognize foreign or mutilated cell tissue like cancer cells, we would expect those immune cells to attack cancer cells right away. But the immune system allows recruited to actually increase and spread the cancer to other parts of the body. Cancer cells produce specific proteins that tell the immune system to leave them alone and help them grow. Why would the immune system want to collaborate with cancer cells to make more or larger tumors? Because cancer is a survival mechanism, not a disease. The body uses the cancer to keep deadly carcinogenic substances and caustic metabolic waste matter away from the lymph and blood, and therefore from the heart and the brain and other vital organs. Killing off cancer cells would in fact jeopardize its survival. And cleansing the body of accumulated toxins and waste products through the various cleansing methods removes the need for cancer. In any disease, people, it is the final and most desperate survival mechanism the body has at its disposal. It only takes control of the body when all other measures of self-preservation have failed. To truly heal cancer and what it represents in a person's life, we must come to the understanding that the reason the body allows some of its cells to grow in abnormal ways is in its best interest and not an indication that it's about to destroy itself. In closing, cancer is a healing attempt by the body for the body. And blocking that healing attempt can destroy the body. Supporting the body in its healing efforts can save it. Something to think about. Maybe a whole new way of looking at cancer. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments with our final set for today. Been an interesting one, huh? Been an interesting program. I began working on some things last night. I put much more time in today. I prepared far more than I'm going to have the time to put in on this today, on this program. Posting over at drkelly.info within the next half an hour, piece that, other than the fact we posted some things last night or last couple days, Dr. V's latest, Become Empowered About Your Health in 2017. Dr. V is a doctor who specializes in breast cancer, who came to me several years ago ordering one of Dr. Kelly's books, and she and I have stayed in touch for a long time. I'm hoping to bring her on as a guest here in the near future. And I don't do a lot of guests, but I'm finding more and more this particular subject matter is too damn important not to. Another post last night, could marijuana use increase the vulnerability to Alzheimer's? Now, we've heard a lot about cannabis oil as a positive, and some people smoke the wacky weed just so they don't have to suffer the pains and the horrendous mess that comes along with chemo and radiation. Another Alzheimer's related column we posted last night, The Inner World of Alzheimer's, Its Meaning, Its Purpose. A piece that I made reference to during the first hour, women's cancer deaths expected to climb 60% by the year 2030. Three more posts that will crop up here in about a half an hour. One of which we opened the first hour with today, the reasons why Big Pharma will never cure cancer. The piece we just spent well over an hour and a half sharing with you, is cancer really a disease or just a survival mechanism? It is well worth the time to read and review all that we talked about in that hour and a half. Obviously, I insert some other commentaries and personal memories of my experience dealing in this field. And another subject that I fully intended on covering tonight, but it's amazingly lengthy, and it's something I came across several weeks ago, and I sat on it. And then I received an email yesterday from an individual inquiring about the use of wormwood. She's got a friend who's been diagnosed, lymphatic stage 3 or 4, I can't remember. and is having marvelous success with wormwood. She used wormwood on her issue and became completely cancer-free, to the shock of her doctor. Of course, they don't want to hear that. Very lengthy, interesting piece. It took me into areas I was not familiar with, but not enough time to cover it today. Wormwood, the parasite-killing, cancer-fighting super herb. Now, I'm going to cheat. I am going to cheat right now. Today is the 4th of January. Guess what? Oh, I'm going to cheat. The Wormwood article, I'm pulling it. And I'm pulling it for a reason. I'm going to hold. Number one, I want time to read it more closely. I want time to do some additional research and study on my own. In addition to that, I want to contact some practitioners I know in not just the Kelly world, but in other. I want to get some input with stuff, and I have several contacts that I wish to make. Now, unfortunately, time is elusive. I received quite some time ago, there's a gentleman who came to me some years ago, indirectly. His name is Clint Young. Clint submits a lot of his work to my buddy Osh. For those of you in the chat room, he's also known as Deputy Dog. The dog sends out, he used to send out once a day, he's now cut back two or three times a week, a fairly intense newsletter with lots of headlines and articles, and he submits most to the Federal Observer, Dr. Kelly, etc. Clint has submitted stuff. Clint's been a friend of the dog's for a good number of years. Clint wrote a small booklet some years ago, which he continues to play with and hone and improve, etc., etc. But all of this is from his personal experience as a cancer survivor. He opens this particular commentary. This commentary is called The Cause of Cancer. Now remember, it's as a general rule, there's only two types of people that can be able to make comment on this. Those of us who have studied beyond the typical allopathic, and those who have studied through their own personal experience. What's the huh for? Clint opens by saying, you would not take your vehicle to a mechanic that could not determine the cause of it not working properly. I mean, an important part of being a good mechanic is knowing what causes a particular problem. Without good diagnostics or knowing the cause, the mechanic would be just guessing at best what the solution to his mechanical problem might be. Clint says, I'm wary of any mechanic that could not quickly and precisely determine the cause of a certain mechanical problem. But he said, I'm also wary of any doctor or group of doctors that cannot quickly and precisely determine the cause of a physical issue. You can replace a vehicle, but it's not possible to replace the human body. And our body is far more valuable than any vehicle. Be most careful of which mechanics or doctors you allow to work on your body. If a particular doctor or doctors has no idea of the cause of your problem, what makes you think they really have a good solution for you? At best, they're shooting in the dark without night vision. Think about that one for a minute. Shooting in the dark without night vision. Well, maybe they'll fix the problem. But when it comes to cancer, more often than not, they just put a patch over the problem, which usually doesn't last very long. The reason current cancer treatments and therapies do not work is because the real cause of cancer is not being addressed. Let's take a look at the real cause of all cancers. And the cause is found in the next sentence. Excess toxins trigger cancer cell formation and then fuel cancer cell growth and multiplication. Cause of cancer in Clint's experience is excess toxins. Excess toxins trigger the formation of cancer cells, and then excess toxins fuel the growth and multiplication of those newly formed cancer cells. And over time, enough cancer cell growth and multiplication occurs so that cancer can be detected. And the medical system has significantly improved the detection of smaller and smaller growths of cancer, which is an improvement of cancer diagnosis, certainly helps one to know much earlier that they have a cancer problem, which is beneficial for it gives one more time to effectively deal with their cancer. Now, what's interesting here is my reading Clint's words. His interpretation of cancer is considerably different than what we've shared with you for most of this program today. That doesn't mean it's wrong. It doesn't mean it's right. It means that within his realm of knowledge, he can only go so deep. I may take all that I've shared with you during this program, dealing with cancer, and sending him a link to it. Nothing happens within the body without cause. I think we can all agree with that. Cancer cells do not form within the body without cause. Every tissue of the human body has cancer trigger genes within the cells that make up those tissues. These gene triggers did not accidentally get placed throughout our bodies. They were designed to be there by a most wonderful and gracious being. And I call this being the Heavenly Father or God. Clint says the best known mechanism for cancer cell formation is that a master trigger gene is activated, which in turn promotes other cancer genes or oncogenes to form cancer cells. And when this happens, bam, cancer cell is formed. And the genetic code that allows for this series of events was secretly placed into the DNA of the body's cells by the Creator for a purpose. And the placement of well-designed oncogenes within the genetic code is not a random event caused by a genetic mutation. It's part of the design to ensure life. You see, I see similarities here, but it's how they've each been approached. The system says either it does not know what causes cancer, or a genetic mutation causes the first cancer cells to form, which they then grow and multiply. This cannot be the case because the rate of cancer among all age groups is increasing at an alarming rate. Genetic mutation alone just does not change fast enough to explain such an increase in cancer rates among all age groups. And also, this is not the case simply because the design of the genetic code itself within our cells' DNA says differently. No, that's when I'm going to go back to the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe. It's all being poisoned. Clint continues, the system implies that radiation directly causes genetic mutations within normal cells to cause them to become rogue cancer cells. At first look, this may seem to be the case, but there's another explanation that fits the total picture of information much better. And that is those who are exposed to harmful doses of radiation become more toxic due to irreparable damage of healthy tissue. Damaged toxins break down forming toxins. And if enough tissue is affected, a massive amount of toxins are quickly released during that breakdown and removal process. If the radiation is intense enough, it'll also damage the detoxification mechanisms of the body. Increased levels of toxins then activate the oncogenes, which in turn initiate cancer cell formation. And the same toxins that activated the formation of cancer cells then fuel cancer cell growth and multiplication. And this explanation is why harmful radiation causes higher cancer rates is more in line with what is really going on. What causes the master cancer trigger gene to activate? Or another way to say this is, what pulls the cancer trigger? According to Clint, excess toxins is what pulls the trigger. And there are multiple indicators. This is the truth. Clint goes on to give us a moderate listing, which I'll share with you. Evidences of excess toxins causing cancer cell formation. One, surgically removed cancer growths are filled with toxins that have a rather foul odor, and the odor is so intense that dogs can actually smell them within a cancer patient's body. Two, when excess toxins are properly dealt with, cancer growth stops, and then cancer growths shrink and dissolve back into the tissues that form them. Three, those who live a toxic lifestyle have incidence of cancer. Four, those who live a detoxifying lifestyle rarely have cancer. Five, the design of the human body, specifically cancer-forming genes or oncogenes throughout the body, gives evidence of a common cancer trigger. Six, the continual failure of the medical system touting false causes of cancer. Seven, excess toxins provide the best explanation of the real purpose of cancer growth. Eight, the entire cancer equation, which includes all cancer patients, makes sense with excess toxins as the cause. And finally, nine, excess toxins cause inflammation, which is a cancer indicator. All living cells within the body are continually getting off wastes from their normal respiration processes. All these wastes are generated. As these wastes are generated, they are easily transferred to the liver by the bloodstream, broken down so that the broken down products can be easily removed from the body. The broken down products are called metabolites. And as long as toxins or their metabolites do not accumulate the high concentrations within any tissue, the cancer trigger genes will not be activated. Now look, we could go on further with this, but I already know that Clint's entire commentary, I will not have time to conclude. At some point after I've spoken, it will be my goal to post this. I also have his complete previous written version of the book, which I began to edit with the intent of publishing it. I was not even going to charge him. I was going to publish for him a single copy of his book. My obvious goal is to make the book available. Does it counter some of what Kelly talks about? In some cases, yes. In other cases, no. But the point is, education is education. It is important we learn the truth. My friends, the truth is out there. Interestingly enough, I have a piece of music with that title. It's a piece of music you've probably never heard before. A piece of music written by a computer expert who also was a musician. Now, in his case, all of his music was pretty well written on and played on computer, like GarageBand, one of those type of things. One of these days, I'll get my mixing board properly working with all of this and find out why nothing is transmitting back up through Skype. Maybe I had Skype on the wrong screen. I don't know. We'll get it figured out. This has been an interesting couple of hours. As I've shared with you on and off over the past few months, I begin to take on a whole different demeanor when I'm doing these health programs. This one may have had a almost too much technical stuff for you guys. But I don't think so. And as I mentioned, the basis for this entire two-hour program tonight is going to crop up on drkelly.info within just a few minutes after our getting off the air. I hope you'll go read it. I'll hope that you will share it with people. But I also hope that you'll take our link for the Dr. Kelly site, drkelly.info, and make it available to people. I hope that if you've not done so, you will actually sign up on the Dr. Kelly site. It's real simple to do. Down below Dr. Kelly's picture on the right-hand column, there's a place where you can sign up for notifications of new postings. Ain't going to put you on an email list. Ain't going to be calling you every 2 days trying to peddle you something. Nope. It's there for the information. Every time we make a new post, whether it's for Dr. Kelly's Kitchen or some new health warning, you will be notified. If at any time in the future you decide you want off, you can get off. I strongly advise you to do it. It is, after all, for your health. And with glass lifted on high, I say, to health with you. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm with you once more under the stars and down by the shore an orchestra's playing and even the palms seem to be when they begin the beginning. To live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the beginning. Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember. When they begin the beginning, oh yes, let them begin the beginning, make them play till the stars.
Do you think we have time? Do you think we have time? These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if We have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. Do you think we have time? Do you think we have time? These are the days of the empty hand. Oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year, yeah, yeah. This is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take my chances, say. I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love. Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to hope, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.